You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Onyx Maps. Now, if you haven't had the opportunity to get Onyx Maps on your phone, you need to get Onyx Maps on your phone, and I'm going to tell you why. Number one, I am the kind of guy who likes to know where I'm at all times, and I like to do a lot of running and gunning. So there's times where access is very important for me, knowing where I was at, knowing how to get to a specific location, especially in the dark of morning or night, getting in and getting out. And the best part for me is that I have GPS on my phone, and Onyx allows you to leave basically breadcrumbs and leave a trail or your access routes on your phone, save those access routes, and then use your GPS going in and out of your tree stand locations every single day. And it's awesome because you won't get lost in the dark. And I use that so much, that little portion in itself, so much throughout the season that it's probably the most useful function of that app. Now, you can also leave waypoints like where your trail cameras are at, where your tree stands are at, where you see scrapes and rubs or marking trailheads or campsites. This is the perfect app for a do-it-yourself hunter. I mean, really for all hunters, because it allows you to journal your properties that you hunt, right? And the more information you have, the more successful you will be on a yearly basis, because you keep gathering data and gathering data and gathering data. And soon you'll see trends in that data, and those trends will lead you to hunting more efficiently and becoming more successful, in my opinion. So go to Onyx, or wherever you download your apps, pick up Onyx, and you can use the discount code NATION20, NATION20, and save 20% off for first-time users. Onyx Maps.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you. All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy podcast. I'm your host, Matt Dye, and we've got something pretty cool in the works for this week, guys. We've got some more just proof and evidence to throw at you from some client success here in the great state of Missouri. Guys, I think, what better way, as Adam and I talk every single week about all these different practices and recommendations and habitats, restoration, improvement, all these different things, all these different techniques that we cover, what better way to just prove their value than discuss some of the history and the development of the properties that we've worked in the past. And so as we're coming into December right here, this is the third full year of Land Legacy. So a lot of the guys and girls who have been a part of the journey with us have had several years of implementing these techniques, applying them to the property, watching regeneration happen, watching transformations happen. And woof, there you go. Here's some awesome hunting in return. And just a short amount of time, when you really think about owning a piece of land and making changes to it, you know, there's some things that we cover that, right, they take years to develop, or you know, it takes years to develop that age structure, have that influence on a herd. But sometimes in the right areas and by doing the right practices and being effective at them, you can see some awesome changes relatively quick. And so a couple weeks ago, Adam talked with several folks from across the country, and I talked with a client from Kentucky, a central portion of Kentucky, who was doing just some fantastic stuff, making these big changes, these big transformations. And today is no different. We're talking to a gentleman out of south central Missouri. So again, pretty close to us. Habitat is just slightly different, but than what you guys would probably hear us talk about at the Prairie Hollow property. Just some slight changes, but those changes make a difference. And so some of the practices that he has done, him and his father-in-law have done on the property are just incredible. The response from the habitat is incredible. And their success on this relatively small-ish farm, and in odd shape too. It's not one of those one that just perfectly lays. It's just a very applicable property to what it is that a lot of people probably face. And so this is proof. This is encouragement. And this doesn't happen overnight or without some determination and rolling up the sleeves and getting busy and getting some work done. So guys, I hope you enjoy this week's podcast as we're talking with Ryan Hesse from Dallas County, Missouri. All right, Ryan, are you there?
I am here.
Man, I appreciate your time this evening. It is it's still November. I know you've already got a buck tag filled, but you could be doing a lot of other things, but you decided to join me on the podcast tonight, so appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Well, this podcast, after a text from you last week, I've been really looking forward to, honestly, having this discussion, recording it, and sharing it with everyone, because some of the success that you guys are experiencing on your property, you just can't make up. You want to have these awesome experiences, and you want to do meaningful work on properties, and then yield the results. And you guys are doing it to a T, and truthfully, from what it sounds like, and we haven't even gotten through all the examples that you guys can share, but what it sounds like is the wildlife are just responding to a T, and you guys are experiencing just, I don't want to say dream hunts, but just fulfilling hunts, let's say. Is that right?
Absolutely. And for lack of a better term, I would say it's almost shocking. I mean, we've had some of those moments where we're just going, we haven't even worked through the whole plan that we discussed with you guys. And
sure,
we're just going, how can it even, you know, get better than it is? But we're going to keep doing it because
yeah,
we know, you know, we're not going to stand still. That's for sure.
That's right. Man, that's so cool. So we'll start with kind of a brief little overview of the property. And I guess we worked with you in February of 2018. So it's been almost 2 years since we were there the day of the consultation. And you guys have been pretty busy since then. And we're looking at roughly 147 acres property, south central Missouri, correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Awesome. And so how long have you guys owned that property?
This was our sixth year of hunting it.
Okay.
So, sixth year and, in year two of, kind of doing the, native restoration process.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So 4 years with no, just let's say, general work besides hanging some tree stands and getting out there and hunting. What were those years like, and what ultimately made you guys decide, hey, you know, I feel like we can make this better, just don't really know how to? What was that deciding factor for you guys?
I think one of the biggest determining factors was how spotty, I guess you could say, the
mm-hmm.
hunting was. You know, it was, you could literally, and we took, you know, a couple of good bucks on the off the property in the 4 years prior, but you didn't know from November 1st to November 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or 5th, and in that prime time period, what was going to happen, where the deer were going to be going, which stand to sit, and you use the wind to your best advantage. But
sure,
other than that, the predictability and was just non-existent.
So pretty, it was like, let's say, a roll of the dice. It's like, I'm gonna hunt here because I know the wind's good there. But beyond that, you know, it could happen or it may not. Just, let's say, just.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And your guys, the shape of the farm is pretty unique. It's rather long and narrow from top to bottom. And so access, really, you guys have one point of access, one point of entry. And so how did that, let's say in those 4 year, that time frame, what kind of impact did that have for you guys?
As far as impact, I would say we didn't know necessarily the impact we were having. We just knew that this is how we access the farm. And we just, we'll go, we'll take, you know, our buggy and we'll park it right here and we'll just walk from there and hope for the best at that point.
Sure. And so, but you know, you guys knew it was relatively, it was kind of a limiting factor, or it played a role into, you know, the success that you guys would have, but just didn't know necessarily what other options there were to be able to improve it.
Right. And I think we would say our best stands were obviously the stands that were furthest from the access at that point for 4 years. So we would, you know, walk, you know, access through the middle and walk, you know, to the edges. And now, even though we access via a low road, kind of going through the middle of the property, with the changes that have been made, you wouldn't know the difference at all as far as that we were accessing through the middle, because the heart of the property now is where the action is at.
Awesome. So like I said, you can't change the access, but you can change how the wildlife then use the property by impacting different areas and then allowing you guys to be able to move around it, knowing that, you know, there's a good chance, let's say the bulk of the deer are going to be in that portion. If my wind's here, I can scoot around them and not have that impact. Whereas before, if it was that just random movement and random bedding because all of the timber looked the same and there was just, you know, no points of greater cover, it was completely random. You might bump them one day and you might not, but you knew at some point you're going to be bumping them.
100%. Yes. I mean, you didn't know where you were going to bump deer. You knew you'd probably bump deer somewhere, but now we know, okay, morning hunt, we're going to hit these stands because we know where the deer are coming from. Evening hunt, we're going to, you know, J-hook around them or get around them, get the wind to our favor, because we know where they're spending their time from, you know, 11 a.m. on until they come out at, you know, 3:34.
Absolutely. Awesome. So, okay, you guys had some success prior to the consultation, everything. But now from just, let's just talk prior to getting into what you guys actually did. Just wildlife sightings. What has changed? What have you guys experienced? Let's talk, you know, deer numbers or mature buck sightings versus turkey numbers or poult success for brood rearing of poults, turkeys, and any other critters you're seeing.
Yeah. We'll start with turkeys. I think the big thing this year, and I know I talked to you earlier this year, that we wanted to do was really start getting into the edge feathering, one for the, you know, guiding deer to try to use, you know, in certain areas, but also to create that better habitat for, you know, the brooding and for the poults. And turkey really, in fact, this deer season, I would say in the last 4 weeks, I've seen as many turkey on the property as I did during the fall, during that time period, probably the prior 4 or 5 years.
Wow. That's crazy.
it was shocking. I mean, sure. I did an all day sit one day and the middle of the day I start hearing things. And the next thing I know, I just see black dots start walking towards me and they're everywhere.
Oh, that's awesome. That's about the only time I think in the month or early portion of November that you kind of wish November away and hope that it's actually late April in Missouri.
Oh man, that's what I was thinking about. That's exactly what I was thinking about, was going, I cannot wait now for a warm morning, some goblin.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. So turkey numbers are doing good. You're seeing birds.
We're seeing birds there. As far as deer numbers go, it's honestly, I mean, just stronger than it's ever been.
Wow.
you know, it's very impressive. Like I said, it's shocking to see. You don't want to take for granted how well things are doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, mature buck sightings, I can tell you in the 4 years prior to starting any work, we would say if we see one or two good mature bucks, not, and that's not including getting a shot opportunity.
Sure, right.
But it's just the fact if we see that.
You're
that's
laying
been
eyeballs.
Good, yes, that's
yeah.
been a good season, you know, right. Just because that's, you know, we're in the middle of cattle country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And that's the thing, you know, when we talked about, you know, where you're located, South Central Missouri, and there's good deer around. Don't get me wrong. Like there's strong deer that get thrown out every single year, and they're just about every county. It happens, and it can happen more so than what it does. But this portion of Missouri is not the sought after, famed, the thing that everyone dreams about. We are in cattle country, and that's it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and. You know, and I think that a lot of people, and I hate to say this, I'm sure use that as an excuse.
Oh yeah, well, that's the truth. It really is. And you know, I don't see from our experience, when done right, I don't see that cattle country, let's say, being a huge limiting factor. There's ways to manage around that. And benefit wildlife, benefit cattle, and the right appropriate forages for both. It can be done, but it takes a change of mindset and sometimes holding back on that trigger. Because
absolutely,
a lot of what we don't have is the age structure, because
mm-hmm.
people see a good 3-year-old and think, wow, that deer's something, and rather than saying maybe when it hits 4. If I've got the right groceries or a different nutrition here on my property, it's going to do something better. It's just a little bit different mindset. So the mature bucks, let's say per square mile, is different from other portions of Missouri.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the unique things that I got to experience this year, and I obviously didn't get to put a tag on him, and I
mm-hmm.
say, yeah, but it may be next year. But we had a very 4.5, 5.5-year-old deer.
Yep.
You know, we had his core area down to around 15 acres early part of November. And we were on the outside of it, and we were trying to just pick and chase it him that way.
Yep.
And we had him at, you know, my dad had him at 60 yards one evening,
mm-hmm.
You know, during archery season towards the end of archery season before firearm season here in Missouri.
Yep.
And then I honestly, the next morning, we had a stand set up, and I said, I'm going to go in for him.
Sure.
You know, this is the time.
Mm-hmm.
And by golly, I had him at 34 yards, and he was just in some thick brush, and that's
yeah.
perfectly fine. That's what you want. And I
yeah.
watched him, and I watched him walk away. And that was just as fun as harvesting the buck that I did this year.
Yeah.
It's just because one, I got to watch him for 10 or 15 minutes, and he didn't know I was there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, and then to say he's living on our farm.
Yeah.
You know, he's spending a time on our farm. How crazy is that?
Right. And I think that, you can probably speak on this probably pretty clearly, but, seeing the difference between quality habitat and then what that does for not only consistency in deer movement, but also just concentrating deer movement around those areas. So that 15-ish acre area that he was using very consistently, there's probably other deer that you've seen. Maybe you're not looking at them as critically as this deer, because there may not be a hit list or whatever, but when you have these pockets of quality habitat, it really does shrink that down. Are you seeing that on your property as well with other deer besides just this buck?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the buck that I harvested that, obviously you've seen pictures
mm-hmm.
of, we have him on a scrape. I don't know how many pictures, from end of October till, you know, November 10th or November 15th, whenever it was the last time I pulled cards. But he was within 200 yards of that scrape where I harvested, 150.
Wow.
I mean, just again, kind of that core area, it shrinks it down where they know it, they feel comfortable, and they know where the does are. The does feel comfortable. It's very interesting to see how the deer respond, in the fact that, you know, and again, we are still a work in progress on this.
Yeah.
But the work we've made, their response to it has been immediate.
Right. Right. And that's kind of it's an eye-opening thing, but it's also one of those things that's like, I know I'm not done, but I can't wait to kind of get closer to that finish line, because if I'm already seeing this, what is it going to be just, you know, 3 more years? Give me 3 more years of that chainsaw or that drip torch or that herbicide addressing this issue, and I can't wait. I can't imagine it.
Right.
So I think you've mentioned in the past that spotting a quail on the place as well.
Yes, there was none. there was none, and earlier this year, my dad and I, and just as a testament here, my dad had LASIK earlier this year, so we didn't get to spend as much time as we wanted to in the woods cutting timber.
Right,
but
right.
when we had the opportunity to, we did, and so it was not near as much as it was last year. So again, you gotta. If you can spend 1 or 2 days, it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, it really will.
It really is. But when we were doing that, we were taking a break, and I told him, you know, one of my goals, you know, is to see this farm. Even though it's a Holina, you know, around 150 acres, I would love to see a covey of quail on it.
Yep.
You know, we've just never had that. I said that would be cool, because we would know that it would just be one of those experiences where you're like, hey, we're making a difference here. And honest to goodness, I didn't even know if they were around, you know, if they were within a 2 or 5 mile radius. I had no clue. And goodness gracious, sure enough, during deer season, about stepped on them, and it just shocked me. And it just, my dad and I were actually going to stands taking the same path, and he was with me, and we both looked at each other and we're like, was that really what we thought it was?
I can just imagine, you know, as soon as that bird flushes, your arms just go up and they just stay up like, yes, I am the champion. Just a couple of chest pounds, like, I did it.
Oh, man, I was grinning ear to ear, because I thought, I did not think within this kind of time frame we would ever see it. You know, when we first started this journey with you guys, having you out, I thought, okay, 3 to 5 years is really when we're going to start seeing things. And I was, for me, that was great. I've got a little girl who's turned 6 years old this year. I've got twin boys that turn 3 next month. And that to me was a big picture. I'm like, I want this farm to be in a good position where when we take them hunting, they'll see 2 or 3, 4, 5 deer.
All right. Right.
You know, when we take them turkey hunting, they'll hear some gobbling. They'll see a gobbler. You know, and so that for me was a big picture goal. And right now we're just going, this is the kids are going to go nuts when they're in a blind.
You're going to spoil them, man.
I hope so. Every parent wants to spoil their kids.
That's right. That's right. So, man, that's just wild. So that's just wildlife sightings and some interaction to the improvements that you guys have made. So I guess let's kind of talk about some of the improvements that you have made, but also something that you have not yet even done on the property. I think that this will kind of shock some people as we get talking about it. So one of the things that we've addressed, I guess, and first before we get into that, kind of paint the picture of timbered acres versus the amount of open acres on the property, that kind of ratio.
Yes, we've got 25 acres that was old. It used to be hay.
Yep.
So it's open, and there's a couple tree lines that break it up into three different fields. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a 13-acre field. We've got a about an 8 acre field and then a 4 acre field.
Okay. So you got a couple fields and let's say a larger complex, and then the rest is timbered and some, you know, relatively young timber, but then you go up, you cross a creek and get into some older timber, and then you've got some that is kind of a glady-like post oak mixture on the southern portion of the property, but
Correct.
quite a bit of timber, right? We're
A
talking,
lot of timber, yes.
yeah,
Lots of it.
lots of timber. So naturally, that's what a lot of the plan is going to be addressing is, okay, here's this massive resource, and the property consists largely of timber. So let's address that. So from the consultation day till now, what are some of the things that you guys have done and implemented on the property?
I think, and now this goes back to probably last year when you guys were doing the would you rathers. I posed
Yep.
you the question, would you rather remove cedar, eastern red cedar, eradicate fescue, and a third option, just giving you guys a third option. And both responses were eradicate fescue. And I thought, by golly, I think at that time when I sent that, it was, we had you out 2 weeks prior. So it was still February. I was like, I can't spray fescue now, but I know this is a high priority. So
Sure.
from February until the end of March, because if I remember right, we were wet in March and we could not get
Yes.
anyone to spray.
Yes.
And then April came and in Missouri, we have
And
the
we had a rough
MFA.
winter too that year.
Yeah.
That was a rough
Yes.
winter. Late winter was rough. It was very cold. We had precipitation, and so naturally, even though it was a cool season grass, that yearly difference was fluctuating. And normally you could spray fescue here in our area, pretty much any time in March, any time the maybe minus the first week of March, the last 3 weeks, you can spray and be really effective. But that year, when you guys were looking at it wasn't until April because of just the
Absolutely.
late winter. And sometimes just a not to get away from it, but sometimes that's just the cycles and the changes in season. Sometimes you have to be able to adjust to make these necessary changes, or you can make these general recommendations, say it's going to be roughly this time, but this was one of those years where, hey, we had to kind of adjust on the fly and address it when that cool season was actually going to be photosynthesizing and take that herbicide in to be able to kill it and do an effective job.
Yeah, no, and I think I even sent you a text because it was middle of April, and I think I said something to the effect they can get out at the end of April. Your thoughts, and you said something like, get it done. And so, what we did then from February until April, we worked on the bedding thickets, but then the minute we could have people in there, we sprayed all 25 acres.
Boom.
And it nuked it that first year. I was shocked.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, this next spring, we're planning on one more spraying because we could see a little bit coming up.
Oh yeah.
But man, the amount of native warm season grasses that were just, the seeds were just sitting dormant underneath the fescue. When it all popped, in fact, when it was probably the second week of May or maybe third or fourth week of May, there's always that thought, did I do the right thing?
Yeah, you're like, I went full bore. Like, I left no
Yes,
area untouched. Was this
25
correct?
acres here that we just absolutely scorched,
Yeah.
and it's looking a little
Brown.
deserty here. I mean,
It's brown.
it's brown. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You wonder, and is it was this the right thing? And I'm telling you, the response within 8 weeks of that, because we would come back and check on it, and I enjoy trail cameras, so I would put the trail cameras up and,
Yeah.
follow along deer. But through the next 8 or 12 weeks, I was, you start seeing stuff pop up, and
Sure.
that now all of a sudden you're in summertime and you're like, is that fescue? Is it, because I'm not a biologist by
Yeah,
any means.
right.
So, but then it starts growing and you're like, that's not fescue. What is it? And then you start looking, you're like, goodness
Wait a
gracious, there's blue
second.
stem everywhere.
Yeah. So a little bit of, let's say, backstory and history on these fields, and this is what, let's say, and to put everyone's thoughts in my minds when we made the recommendation, is these acres had been hayed, and it was a local guy, I think a neighbor, who was doing the haying for you guys. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes.
And it was pretty much a deal where, hey, you come in, clean these fields off for us. Don't let them get too brushy. Take the hay; it's yours. But you're just going to help us out by clearing the fields. Is that right? That was a previous agreement.
Essentially, yes. And that was just carried on from the previous landowner, because the previous landowner said, "Oh, neighbor X, he just hays it, and you know he watches the property."
Right. Okay.
And, you know, so it was kind of like when we bought it, it was, okay, let's not upset the apple cart immediately here.
Yeah.
You know, but again, we, at the same time, we're like, well, we don't have tractors. We don't have the equipment to hay it. So it's mutually beneficial at this point in time.
Sure. So through that process, this neighbor who was doing the haying and the baling, it was a very kind of, let's just say, secondary of importance for him, because we could tell that a lot of times bales were left in the field late, or it was hayed way past prime for fescue. And when you do that, generally speaking, in our neck of the woods, when you have these really late initial first cuttings, and there is a decent seed bank of warm season grasses, you will start to see the warm season start to poke through and start to see little blue stem trying to struggle through, or little pockets of Indian grass. And I remember being in that 13-acre field and seeing, wow, there's a big old clump of Indian grass over there and one over there. And it was not dominant at all, but it was still there. And then around the very edges of the field too, it was, man, there's big blue, there's Indian, there's a little blue over there. So we could tell that underneath this carpet here, there's something more, there's something better. And most likely, even if you get a heavy forb component and not that grass component, you're still way, way, way better off. So regardless, we're spraying it out, and that's what led to the decision. But from what you're telling me and explaining to me, is it came back really good.
Oh my goodness. Better than, again, you just don't know, at least for me. I'm not experienced, so it's like I just don't know. And when we did it, it's unbelievable too, because we try to keep a lane around all the field edges, and I will say mowed for trails for access. It makes it easy for us. Obviously the deer love it too. But when you're walking right next to it, and I'm not a tall guy, you know, I'm 5'6", 5'7", but it's taller than you.
Right.
And then you see trails going into it, you know, because it's, you know, 5.5-6 foot tall or taller. You're just going, this is unbelievable. You know, this is just truly crazy.
Right.
You know, so it's shocking to me how much was in the seed bank, honestly.
Sure. And I think that, you know, as we've talked through text stuff, there's additional follow-up stuff that we may alter and change and throw into the mix now, is because, you know, that grass component is so very good from a cover standpoint. But
oh man,
we can have that cover component, but then add some forbs by going in and doing some dormant season disking. So you know, we're talking about mopping up a little bit of the fescues, some of the green spots in it, but then this year potentially doing a little bit of light disking through some of these areas and having incredible forb growth come back, and all those 25 acres offer the awesome food and cover now. And it's like, it just keeps getting better, man.
Right. And that was when you suggested the dormant season disking. That was just obviously not a light bulb for me, but it was when you said it, because it's like I was concerned that the grass was actually getting too thick.
Uh-huh.
And then who would think and who would complain about having too thick of warm season grasses? But here, when you start thinking about these things for all the wildlife, you're just going, especially when I was like, you know, you see a quail and you're just like, I got to protect this thing. How can I protect this thing?
Yeah, sure. You know? Sure. And then all the additional I guess attraction from the insect life for the attracting to the forbs, and then that being supportive of turkey poults during the growing season, and it just the list goes on and on and on. When it's a simple a light disking, but you're not removing the value of cover in the area, because what you share with me through November is those areas were hot, lightning hot for doe activity, and then therefore buck activity as well in these openings, because now there's cover, whereas before during the fall it was just basically a single hay cutting, but again it was maybe a foot tall, and so they were just wide open fields prior, but now you're hunting these areas with cover. So how has that changed your guys's kind of, let's say, hunting approach, and then what you guys are seeing now that we've got substantial cover?
Yes, you know, we've got, for every wind, we've got a stand where the you know, deer are creatures of edge. That's you learn that when you start deer hunting, and so you're like, okay, where's the edge, and you really focus on that. We've got a stand set up on around all of our fields for every wind, and goodness gracious, again, when you see that thick and that tall of the native grasses, you still in the back of your mind, at least for me, you're still going, well, maybe they just aren't going to use that, you know, because, you know, it's just grass. Is it really cover, you know?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, come November, at least on our property, when the does felt pestered by these bucks, especially these young bucks, you know, that first part of November, there was multiple times. In fact, I harvested a doe late October off a stand that my brother actually harvested two deer off of. Mm-hmm. But I harvested the doe, and then you get up and you go to, you know, find it and take care of everything, and all of a sudden you start kicking up other does in the middle of the field that you had no clue were there.
Right.
And it's even my brother, when he harvested those deer, we went and we found his buck that he shot, and goodness gracious, as we're walking up to it, a doe pops up and just takes off running, and you're just going, I had no clue that deer was here.
Sure.
But then, you know, and you see these bucks, you know, wind checking the field, you know, they're getting the wind to their advantage, and they're checking that whole field, and you're like, you can put yourself in a better position from a hunting standpoint by knowing, okay, the wind's blowing this way. I've got a tree line here that I can set up a stand in, and he's going to cruise this tree line because he can cover 13 acres right here, because he knows they're in here. He may not know exactly where they're at, but he knows they're in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to see them to then know that they're in there. He's going to smell them, stick his nose in there, and then pursue if he wants to or if he needs to. But he is going to scent check that area because it has that cover. I'm sitting back loving it. Keep going.
Oh, I was going to say, and that's exactly, you know, my brother, he doesn't get to hunt much a year, maybe 3 days a year, four days a year. So we always try to say, Nate, you know, you do what makes you happy, and we're going to enjoy it. But man, the buck that he shot, it followed the script to the T on the scent fact that it was scent checking this field, and he locked on to, you know, the does that were out in the field, and here he comes walking right out, and where he walked right out was obviously right under my brother.
Perfect. Awesome. So real quick, so to you said you guys sprayed the 25 acres. If you don't mind sharing, what did that cost, and you had a local co-op, I believe, do that spraying, mm-hmm. Just a general 5% application of glyphosate to treat the fescue. Do you mind sharing what that ended up costing you all?
Not a problem at all. For the 25 acres, it cost us $500, and it was the best $500 on the farm we've spent in 2 years.
Wow. And we shared pre-show and made the joke, is like, that's the cost of one of the shoulder mounts. Right there.
That's
from the deer you harvested. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And when we got the price back, it was just, again, we kind of were like, holy cow, especially now on the backside, you know, again, it's hindsight's 2020, and you're looking back and you're going, that was, with all the stuff we could have done, you know, you could have paid someone to put in a food plot, you could have, you know, done all this stuff, and it's like, we've made a long-term impact that's going to last
Huge.
for years for minimal cost in the grand scheme of things.
Huge, huge impact. And now the only thing that you left to do, which is super easy because you've got road systems around each field, is it's just burn it. And burning, it's pretty much free. If you can do it yourself, you feel comfortable. And so you've completely changed that 25 acres for $500. Completely changed it for years and years and years to come. So that's and if you go in there and you disc some, yeah, you might have a tractor to rent if you don't have one, but that's again very minimal cost, and you do that maybe you're just rotating to a third each year, but that's again a very minimal cost for producing, you know, let's say 2,000 pounds of food an acre after that. You know, it's just incredible to have such minimal cost of managing the native plants and the communities that are naturally there versus trying to supplement and create the, let's say, food plots, let's just say.
Absolutely. And you know, I think I mentioned it to you, and I hope I didn't mention it earlier, but the neighbor to the south of us, they, for cattle, they put, you know, 15 acres in corn during the summer, and they use that for silage, and then they cover crop it with a winter wheat or a winter oat, you know. So they're doing the right thing there. But I was able to visually watch from my stand deer that would not cross the fence because they were more interested in the natives and the woody browse that we had on our property when they could have jumped the fence and gone literally 15 yards into a 15-acre winter wheat or winter oat field. And they just didn't. They just didn't. And it shocked me too how much usage and draw that the natives provide these deer. It's almost like they know they're missing them and they want them in their diet, so they're going to find them.
Sure. That's incredible. Just to, you know, visually observe that much forage, when you know, like I said, just across the way, there's what a lot of people would want to be hunting over and choose to hunt over versus that native forage there that you guys have been promoting on the property. Wow. So when it comes to the timber and everything, you guys have gone in and cut quite a few bedding areas or bedding thickets across the property, and I think that you personally have had success the past 2 years hunting and harvesting deer. Kind of describe those scenarios and what you guys have done. I think by now, hopefully, everyone kind of knows that, you know, those are roughly little mini clear cuts in the timber. You know, if there is productive oaks or mass-producing trees, probably going to be opting to leave those. But largely, you know, we're talking 80% canopy open to get the brambles, the woody browse, those types of forages back in those areas that also produce the cover. So talk a little bit about some of the hunting strategy that you've deployed there and some of the success.
I would start with saying this, you know, before we had you guys out, you know, I had tried to do some reading again as a fairly new property owner. You start reading about timber stand improvement, what it is. So you get this idea in your head. But let me tell you, and I it's an overwhelming feeling saying, you mean you want me to cut down trees that are going to take years to grow back? And so I know there's people that are probably listening going, doing in the same boat that I was in, saying, you just don't have that confidence. So number one, when you guys came out and you said, this is a great area, this is a great area, just fire up, you know, flush cut, and you start going through it, you're just like, it gives you a confidence that you did not have. And I think that is essential in all of that, is being able to say, you know, putting trust in that and giving you the confidence to do that. So that to me is number one. Number two, the way we laid it out, you know, we've got a handful of these bedding thickets, you know, throughout the property, or more than a handful. But we debated, do we stick to one, you know, this year, you know, and then, you know, one or two this year, and then do one or two next year, or do we evenly distribute it, you know, and spend an hour on this one today, an hour on that one today, an hour on that one today, and an hour on that one today. You know, we put 4 or 5 hours in and we work on 4 or 5 hours, and then when we come back, we'll do the same thing. And that's the route we did. We spread it out rather than saying, you know, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's what we did. And so far, it's worked well for us, because just the amount, the small amount of change we've made in the grand scheme of things, because we're still working on it, you know, the reaction to what we've done was felt immediately. I mean, it's just absolutely immediately. And so from that standpoint, you know, now we're at a point where we're 2 years in, where we've spent probably a full day working on each one of them, you know. And so when you've got six or eight of those, you know, in, you're just like, man, we've cut a lot of trees down.
Sure, sure.
It's looking good.
On
And
average,
for
how big do you think most of those areas that you guys have accomplished, you know, with that time, I guess running two saws in there?
we had a really high stem count of junky trees,
You did.
just absolutely junky trees. And so we were few and far between on the big mass producing trees, but we kept those because we're like, they're beautiful and that's going to be a producer. So I would say, you know, we, goodness gracious, I would, we probably would spend an hour, and this is not breaking our back. Again, we're not, we want to enjoy this. And so, you know, an hour, maybe 2 hours per acre and a half, 2 acres, you know. And like I said, you know, I'm, you know, 37 years old. My dad's in his early 60s. So we're not working, you know, like this is our job by
Sure,
any
sure.
means, but we do want to get work done. And like I said, when you're cutting a lot of the no value, honestly, there's no value to that timber. You have a lot of that,
Oh, yeah.
and you have to remove it.
That's it.
And honest to goodness, and to get to the hunting strategy side of things, for the last 2 years, I've harvested 2 bucks that downwind side of the bedding area where they were coming into it. You know, it's been predictable. And I would, I know you guys have mentioned it multiple times, but if I never do or see another hinge cut again, I'll be happy. I've observed too many deer, you know, and we don't have hardly any hinge cuts. And I will, you know, but we did do some. And looking back on it now, I'm like, I might just go back and flush cut those things, because honestly, they don't serve any purpose for what I'm seeing. Compared, when I'm looking over this acre and a half area that's been TSI'd, and I've got these hinge cuts, and I can watch the deer and how they're moving and how they're responding in their element. It's like, I personally just don't see any reason for
Sure. Well, that's a good observation. I agree.
And I know that's the fad, and obviously that's everywhere. And again, when I first started, when we first became landowners, and you start reading, and goodness gracious, hinge cuts are
Yeah, sure, you'll
everywhere
find
on
that.
the air. You're gonna find that. And so you in your head, you're like, okay, this is the way to go. But, you know, I just would, you know, for the purpose, the best purpose we found for it on our property has been the edge feathering to steer the deer and to provide, you know, almost a wall per se, and then to allow that sunlight to get behind there to really widen that edge to steer the deer, and, you know, to
Perfect.
provide a different edge versus a hot, you know, that hard edge of timber to feel.
Preach. I'm over here saying preach. Amen, brother. You're going to host the next podcast. I don't need to say anything. I love it. No, I mean,
Well,
it's when you have the ability to observe the stuff and just watch deer react to it, it just makes a lot of sense. It's just that further confirmation of it's not necessary. So I'm not going
Oh,
to spend my
man.
time doing that, but in these instances where I'm trying to steer deer, then you start seeing them navigating around these treetops and coming out 20 25 yards from the stand. You're like, okay, here's where it's applicable.
And you know, and I guess why I get so excited about it is obviously seeing is believing, and I didn't
Yeah.
think I would see it to this extent, but man,
Sure.
it's like I hope other people are able to experience what we've experienced, and it's just like, man, gee, listen to Matt and Adam, they know what they're talking about, guys.
Well, no, I think you're doing an awesome job of relaying. Okay, hey, we hear the elements that we've been working on. Here's what we've been seeing, and here's how we've been able to be successful with it too. And here's the response from the vegetation. Here's the response from the wildlife, and it's just it is clear as day, and it gets me excited, honestly, Ryan, just to hear you talk about it, because you're able to experience and share that passion of being out there working in the woods, making an impact, seeing the wildlife respond in a very beneficial way, and then translating that into the success and sharing these hunts and memories and making an impact, leaving a legacy with this property that you're going to be able to share with your children. That full circle is what it is absolutely all about.
Oh man, and it is it's really neat to see in my own life the view that I have, like when I'm in the stand, not just the physical view, but also saying, okay, right there, I need to improve that area. There's some trees that I missed. I need to take those down. And you're constantly thinking about that, and it gets you excited. And I love deer season. I love hunting, from October 25th to November 25th. It's like that's prime time.
Oh man,
But
it's
then I'm also like, can December, January, February get here fast enough? 'Cause I am so excited to get the chainsaw fired up here.
And that's why I love deer season, but I also love land management season, if you will,
Oh
because
man.
it's just 'cause once you experience it and once you see and observe what is happening out there, you're 100% confident in yourself that I'm doing something that's gonna make a difference, and it makes that work so rewarding, even though it's gonna be 10 months before you see that benefit from a stand. You might see it in trail camera, or you see it when you come back and spring green up or whatever, but you know without a shadow of a doubt that what you're gonna do is gonna provide you and or family additional opportunity.
Right. And it's so rewarding for me right now, but I'm looking at the future, like I said, with young kids that here in the next few years, right now, we introduce them to walking through the woods. We live on a small, we call it funny farm, and we have a walk through the woods, but getting them into the hunting and to see them, the reward is going to be so much more fulfilling, and just saying it, when they are able to experience what I'm experiencing.
Yes, absolutely. And we have to cover this point. And someone's probably sitting back thinking, you know what? I haven't heard him mention this yet. And it's for a reason. I'm glad you stayed on the podcast this long because, please, Ryan, tell me, how many acres of food plots have you guys planted on a 147-acre property?
Zero.
And I guess I should reiterate that that is. There are recommendations
Yes,
for
there
food
are.
plots. However, priority and the way you guys have decided to move forward and make the impacts and changes on the property is I haven't yet done there, gotten there. I haven't yet done that or put my energy into food plots. There is literally no food plots on this 147 acres, and the deer hunting. From what you have told me, and the proof from harvest photos is incredible. And you are consistently seeing and honestly foreshadowing what deer are going to do, despite not having that food plot there that so many people rely on for
Right.
patterning purposes.
Right. And I think, you hit the nail on the head. You just said so many people rely on it, but also food plots can, to again, for someone getting into it, they can also be intimidating as
Sure,
well.
sure.
So then you're like, okay, what's not intimidating? Well, eradicating fescue, that's not intimidating.
Right.
Firing up the chainsaw, putting on your safety equipment, that's not intimidating. I can handle both of those things. And I've,
Yeah.
I can put in a few hours doing that. And when you do that and you start seeing the results of that, I hate to say it, in the back of my mind, I wonder, do I really, food plots one day would be cool, to hunt over because they're beautiful and, but man, is it necessary?
Yeah.
And you start debating that in your head. And at the end of the day, yes, I'd love to do food plots, but I feel like, and even our discussions with you guys, our time right now is better spent doing work in the timber, making sure that fescue's gone, really trying to get it back to, how God created it.
Yep.
And that makes a world, it makes an absolute world of difference.
Yeah. I mean, it really is night and day. And what I'm really excited for you guys is to begin implementing prescribed fire now into these systems. Now that you have gone and mechanically changed or altered these open fields or altered the timbered units on this property, now that you're experiencing that regeneration and seeing these diverse forages and forbs come back, now it's about time to start looking at it saying, wow, how do I make that better? How do I keep it?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're experiencing such good stuff. How do I keep it in this state? And that's where the fire is going to come through and really just probably blow your mind a little bit more when that is into the system of the property. Because I know we shared the numbers there on the podcast before, but when you have young forest regenerating per acre, and let's say you've got 6 or 8 of those from the bedding thickets, you've got 1,000 pounds of forage per acre in those units. When you introduce fire into those, you not only regenerating that young forest, but you're also adding more forb components into it. You're getting up to 1,500 pounds of forage in those acres. So imagine that distributed back out across the property, and then you're addressing the warm season grass fields and adding forbs from disking, and then you're burning on top of that. It just gets so much better, and then you still haven't even done a food plot.
Right. And the wildlife knows it and they respond to it.
They do. They 100% do.
I know I've texted you and I've been talking to my dad, and I'm just like I said, we're ready for the fire, because we're like, okay, when deer season's done, it's time to get, we have the holidays with Christmas, but then it's like, all right, we're back at it, and we get to enjoy the property in a very unique way.
Certainly. So my question to you is, 147 acres, we're about 2 years into this thing. Did you think that you would be able to experience these changes that you've experienced thus far on the property?
No, especially not in this time period.
Right.
I knew, and that was the thing, when we had you guys out, I knew in my heart, after reading and doing my research, I'm kind of one of those people, I'm a nerd, I like to read a lot.
Me too.
I'm like, okay, I know this can get better, and I know in my head what needs to be done. But how does this go about? Again, I'm not a biologist. That's not what I've studied.
Yeah.
So I need assistance. I'm not going to be stubborn enough to say I don't need assistance here.
Right.
And that's where you guys know how to do that. So when you came in, it was like, I know what you're talking about. So that's a good foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were just, this is how it has to, you go, this is how it gets done. And then you start doing that. And you're just, like I said, the short amount of time it takes wildlife to respond, especially when you're the, for lack of a better term, island compared to other properties around you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got, what's unique too, is we've got on each side of across the road from us, there's 300 acres that doesn't get hunted.
Yeah.
Behind us, a quarter mile, there's, 200 acres that we're not aware of that gets hunted, mm-hmm. And that's great for us, but it's still incredible to see that even the second weekend of firearm season, you have 15 does walk right under your stand.
Right.
It's just shocking.
Just doing what you would expect them to do.
It's shocking, because 3 years ago, before we started this, the second weekend of firearm season, we would have considered it a good weekend if we would have saw 3 to 5 deer on it.
Wow. That's huge.
Absolutely.
And that is a testament to the work that you guys have done, the habitat that you've created. But then also with that habitat in conjunction with the access is now that you're able to know where the deer are and where they're mm-hmm. not and be able to get to these places and hunt them and hunt the 147 acres more effectively. So that's just incredible. I'm sitting back. I'm blown away. From your guys' experiences thus far, like, I've done this, like, I know that is what is going to happen, but it's quick and mm-hmm. it's powerful. So I appreciate you sharing these experiences thus far with everyone. So with that being said, what is your encouragement or your charge to everyone listening? Who's maybe nervous to get started in doing some of this stuff? What would you say to them?
First off, I would say it doesn't matter if you have 10 acres or 1,000 acres.
Yeah.
You can make it better. And I promise you, if you've got 10, 20, 30, 40 acres, I can tell you our 147 acres feels drastically bigger now that we've started this. And it hunts so much bigger than I ever imagined.
Wow.
So, you know, that to me is don't think just because I have, you know, this amount of land. In fact, the house that my wife and I live, we're on 10 acres here.
Yeah.
And there's a back section that's woods. This here in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to fire up the chainsaw and start cutting trees down, you know, to open it up just for the wildlife for my kids to watch.
I love it.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, from that standpoint, don't let the size of the property matter mm-hmm. to you. You can make a huge, huge difference. And two, again, if you're like me, you can research it and you can know it in your head, but you need someone with the experience, which is where you guys are this is what you guys do. You've seen it on tens of thousands of acres on how to do it. And it builds confidence, you know, it's built confidence in me to say, you know,
that I'm spraying 25 acres today.
Yeah. What I'm doing is making a difference. If someone asks me, you know, what do you think I should do? I'm going to say, spray that 25 acres of fescue, get rid of it. It's going to change your world from a wildlife standpoint.
Absolutely, man. I love it. I love it. This has been a fun podcast, man. I can't wait to look at it in two more years and come back and hear the success. Hopefully the kids will be involved in the hunts at that point and just to hear more of the updates. But, man, it's awesome to know that the habitat, the landscape is responding in the way that we hoped and probably even better. And that's just encouraging and good to hear. So, man, appreciate your time. Appreciate you sharing this story. And I hope for everyone who was listening that it was encouraging to know that when you go out and you do this stuff, it's not in vain. It works. You know, it's not just a waste of time or a hope and a prayer. And the stuff produces results, and it's real.
Yes. Yes.
So, well, no, man, thank you so much.
No, we appreciate it. And like I said, it's we want everyone else on board right now too.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, Ryan, thank you. Thank you again for your time. We will we'll have to catch up here soon.
Sounds good, Matt. Talk to you later, bud.
All right, we'll see ya.
Bye.
I don't know about you guys, but I thoroughly enjoyed that discussion with Ryan. Those experiences, they're pretty powerful stuff, but the important thing is to note that they happen and it's not random and it's important to learn from those, and I hope that's exactly what you guys did. But I think Adam and I are going to be almost out of job here with hosting the podcast because Ryan just killed it. He just nailed all the points that needed to be driven home from, again, here's what we were dealing with before, here's what we changed, here's how we changed it, here's what we experience now, and here's a success. That is the full story. And so, Ryan, thank you again for your time, man. It was just, it was awesome. I loved it. So, guys, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that podcast. You know, 147 acres, how applicable is that to so many places across the Whitetails Range, whether you're in Georgia or Tennessee, Ohio, New York, Iowa, Arkansas? This stuff, you can be successful on there. You know, seeing, I think it was four different mature bucks, it was more than that he texted me about. I can't remember the exact number, but it was definitely more than that. In this 4 week span of October 25th to the 25th or so in November, just sighting after sighting and solid number of does, and it's just, it's incredible. It's incredible to know that, hey, when I go out there, I spend a couple hours running that chainsaw, I'm creating habitat and I'm making that impact. And what a way to do it with his dad there in the picture, just tackling it together, working it as a family, have plans to bring the kids out there in the next few years. I love everything about that story. So appreciate you guys listening and following along. Again, let us know your thoughts when you see this pop up on social media. Be sure to be following us there, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. If you have any questions about what it is we do, please let us know, info@landonlegacy.tv, and we'll get you guys answered up with those questions or consulting inquiries. We've got some awesome, awesome stuff coming too. Some new services that we will be offering here in December and 2020 and beyond. So you guys are going to want to check out those podcasts and share those with buddies and friends who can also have that same type of success that Ryan and his family are having on their property. So thank you guys so much again for listening. Look forward to next week and what the rest of the hunting season has. We're getting into December, which is also known as Deercember in a lot of people's minds. So we're getting a big shift towards food, and that doesn't have to be food plots, as Ryan discussed. That can be native browse, woody browse, specifically as we're getting here into December and later into the season. So you don't have to be overstanding corn or standing soybeans to be successful. Knowing what whitetails want and getting out there and putting yourself in position will result in filled tags. So have fun out there. Be safe. Again, reach out. Let us know if you have any questions. Thank you again for listening. We'll catch you next week. Yeah.